Greetings from Podcastville. The Church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by Onnit. Listen, if you're looking for supplements, this is the way to go. Between the Shroom Tech Immune, that's what keeps me afloat on all these disgusting plane rides. Why? Like the other night, I went to fly to fucking Columbus. The plane was coming in from England. I had people with turbans. I had Japanese people with face masks on and shit. I had a bunch of weird-looking people in there. You know somebody dropped a germ in there, the 300 fucking people. Especially if the plane is coming over from whatever. I looked at Kay Quigley, and I popped four of those Shroom Tech Immunes, and I walked on that plane, and I was the biggest, I had the biggest dick on that plane, because I knew I ain't getting sick, and look, I'm back, 5-hour flight with a bunch of fucking germs, there and back. This is what Shroom Tech Immune does, never mind Shroom Tech Sport, never mind the fucking Alpha Brain, just go to Onnit.com and press
Church,
bam, and get 10% off your first order. Also, thank you, people. I've been seeing a lot of you guys asking me questions about the Fuji Gi. Tremendous, especially if you're a fat fucking A5 and A6. They're tough, they're durable, and these little young kids could hang on the fucking collars all day long. Fuck them. Go to Fujisports.com right now and press in.
Church.
Boom. Another 10% off delivered to your house. The best geese, they got mats, they got rash guards. They always got a sale on something going on. Go to Fuji Sports right now. That's what I use. I love them motherfuckers. People pull on me, tug on me. Fujisports.com right now. 10% off. Put in the word.
Church.
There you go. Kick this fucking mule, Lee. It's Monday the 23rd of April. Out of respect. Oh, shit. Monday afternoon, you bad motherfuckers.
We've taken too much for granted.
Too much for granted, you fucks.
And all the time it had grown. From techno seeds we first planted. If all the mind of its own.
Churchill, what's happened now? The Christ Killer.
Marching in the streets.
Dean Del Rizzi.
Yeah.
Dragging iron feet.
Here we go.
Laser beaming hearts.
You bad motherfuckers.
Ripping men apart.
Pa-pam.
From others seeing my perfection.
Oh, shit.
Well, we could do as we please. In secrecy, this infection. We're spreading like a disease.
Fucking Metal God's the best.
Oh, man.
Judas Priest. The reason why I opened up with that is my brother, my musical fucking mentor, Dean Del Rizzi, went to see Judas Priest last night. What's the review, brother?
Smoking, man.
Were they really good?
Yeah, you know, they... First of all, the fucking show was packed. It was at the big one, the Nokia Theater. They changed the name Microsoft, but it holds, I think, about 8,500 seated. And that thing was full to the gills. And then their stage show looked like an 80s, like they spent money. Like a lot of bands out there are going cheap now. They just got a couple screens over the amps, you know? These guys had a fucking show, man. They put the money in and killed. They're playing old shit. Running Wild, Sinner. It was like 1-2 punch, Running Wild into Sinner. I was like, oh, I already got the money's worth right here.
Right there, yeah. And the lineup was tremendous.
Oh, they had Saxon, which to me is one of the greatest, new waves of British heavy metal bands. You know, Saxon with Denim and Leather and, Dallas 1 p.m., Motorcycle Man. Those guys are underrated, man. Underrated.
I never really got into them. I was past. Fuck. I was like into something else when they were out.
They're killer. It was like at the time, it was them
Saxon,
and Maiden.
That one with Y.
We had Accept,
there's
Maiden,
a couple of them
Saxon.
I don't really know much.
Uriah Heep.
Saxon, Uriah Heep.
Yeah, that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, Uriah Heep is an old band.
Yeah.
I know about Uriah Heep.
That shit, man, Saxon is just, they got the singer, his name's Biff Byford, and the guy, still right now, he's probably like, I don't know, Lee, look it up, the guy's probably like 72 or
now,
something.
Now, what about Halford? How did he sound?
He sounded amazing.
Did he do Victim of Changes?
That was the only one they didn't do. They did an old song off Stay in Class, but they didn't do Victim.
Not Saints in Hell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They did Saints in Hell.
That's the one with the
guitar? Yeah. No. He's 67.
67.
Now, what about, you said at the end, Tipton came out.
Yeah, then the last three songs, Metal Gods. What was the other one he did? Living After Midnight. And one other song, he came out. It was amazing how they did it. They went off, and then boom, he just appeared by himself on stage, all dark, just a spotlight on him. People went crazy, and he whipped into Metal Gods. He was doing the moves, had the shades on, the leather. He looked great, played great. It was awesome to see him.
You know, there's things you remember in your life. There's things you do, and then people remind you, and you see your friends, especially when you get to 50,
yeah,
40, you see your friends from high school, and they remind you. I was such a Sabbath, Led Zeppelin guy. Like, that's all I needed. You know what I'm saying? At one point in my life, that was all I needed. Then my buddies turned me on to Leonard Skinner, and it was like, ah. But Street Survivors was just so good.
Yeah.
But I was still, like, loyal to them. And then one day, I'm in study hall. And this kid, Steve Runny, that I still talk to, the kids of my nieces, I'm going to them, her wedding August 1st in Denver. I mean, you know, they're my family. At that time, little did I know that they were going to adopt me.
Yeah.
Me and him were in study class, and he passed me the cassette to Unleashed in the East. And I remember taking it home going, I am not listening to this junk.
Oh.
Like, I'm not listening to this junk. This is fucking junk.
Really?
Judas fucking Priest. What kind of name is fucking that?
Yeah.
You know, at that time, I still had that little faggy Catholicism mentality. Like,
yeah,
I wouldn't listen to Master Reality. I didn't like that Pope on the rope at the end of the rope. Do you think he's a fool? I wasn't into that yet. And I put something, made me put it on. And I took the long version. Like, usually I put one song on, and I could tell you, like, this shit's just not going to work.
Yeah.
I let the whole cassette run. And by the time they got to center, that's the one. I forget what side was on the cassette. I forget that order of shit.
Yeah.
But I knew when he was like, the center.
Yeah.
The guitars came in, and Victim of Change just fucking took me to a different level.
Oh,
man. And just on the strength of those two songs, it was like a quick transition. I became a Priest fan. The first Priest album I bought was, I went, gave the cassette back, and bought Unleashed in the East.
Yeah.
And I could not believe how great they sounded. Like we grew up on live music and albums. You know, the other day I was in Columbus, and I felt like talking about it on stage.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what the biggest kick I got for me was growing up between the ages of 12 and 17. Really, the years that my mother was alive, 16, I'll tell you why, because you have to put them together to be allowed to do, and that's something that we don't have in this country no more, called the midnight movie.
Oh, yeah.
Every Saturday, there was a midnight movie. The movie theater, if there was two movie theaters, let's say if it was Lemley,
yeah,
they would have two movie theaters going. One would definitely be the Rocky Horror Picture
every
Show
time.
At midnight.
Every time.
And the other one would be, at that time,
Song Remains the Same.
It would be The Song Remains the Same, Pink Floyd Live at Pompeii.
Yeah.
Neil Young with The Crew. They had a movie that came out for a while, boring as fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even high on acid, you're bored to pieces. But then Neil Young came out with Crazy Horse. That movie came out, I think. There were a couple bands who had movies. The memorable two were Pink Floyd Live at Pompeii and
Song Remains the Same.
They probably had an eight fucking movie rotation at this Fairview Cinema. But I tell you what movie they did have at midnight one Saturday, because it was just overwhelming.
Yeah.
Apocalypse Now.
Oh.
We went to the midnight, and it was just heavy fucking duty. Like, at midnight, when that double barrel sunshine is peaking. Like, when that acid is peaking, when you're tripping, you're freaking out on the bus, you're getting off the bus, you don't even know if it's a red light or a yellow light or a green light, you just walk across the street, your friend has to pull you out of the street because you're tripping, you think the car's 30 miles away, 30 yards away, but he's really 3 feet away, like, that's how sizzling we'd be when we'd stand online for that movie theater, and it wouldn't just be us.
Yeah.
If there was 80 people standing online, 60 of them were tripping balls just like we do with the same acid from the same neighborhood we got it in.
And
it
sneaking was booze in, too.
Sneaking
booze in.
Wolf Schmidt made those flat vodka bottles.
Yeah.
You get the big one. Wolf Schmidt.
That's it.
The silver label when we were kids.
Down the pants.
Yeah, right down the fucking pants. Yeah. And you got something inside to drink it with. I had a friend who would just drink the silver label straight. I was never a vodka straight type.
No snack bar needed.
No snack
Brought
bar,
our
no
own
popcorn,
shit.
No
None
nothing.
Of that shit.
You the once the movie turned off, once the light went down, Lee, you would hear 30 of these. People flipping caps during the movie up in the air. So you're tripping on acid, and all of a sudden you see a fucking thing flying through the air. People would take the beer caps off the caps.
Flick them.
And flick them. And they would fly through. I could never do that. Yes. I was retarded.
I had a damn
And you'd be tripping your balls off, and all of a sudden the thing would go flying through. You thought it was a fucking flying saucer.
It's amazing. I like to think that, like, oh, the times have changed. The kids weren't doing that. But I was just one of those 20 kids who went sober, got a Diet Coke and a small popcorn, and, like, did none of, like, I went to one movie high in high school. And it was hysterical, but, like, I just didn't, I don't know. I don't know why I didn't do it.
Oh, the late movie, the midnight movie was just the best. Because you were, like, out late style.
I think Yes had a movie.
Yep. AC/DC, Let There Be Rock.
We did not have that
yet. Yeah. Later on, though, they had that.
Had never. I'm talking, this is 75 through 81.
Yeah.
These were the prime years of midnight films, movie houses that specialized in three film afternoons.
Yeah.
So, especially in San Francisco.
Yeah.
On the main street off the Tenderloin, which I think is Mission.
Right.
The busy street there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right there in that first intersection, there was a movie house that used to play three movies for $2. That's when you want to kill an afternoon,
though. Yeah, yeah.
And you'd go in there at 11:45 and walk out of there at 6:15. You just sit and, guys, I did it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
I did it 1,000 times. That's how I would keep up on the, and they'd do a Clint Eastwood festival.
Oh, yeah.
Ape Fest. Lee festival,
remember that one?
Ape Fest. Conquest. The
All
real fucking
them.
Ape.
All
that one Ape movie, I put it on the end. I couldn't even put it on. It's the most racist thing I've ever saw. And I didn't feel like that when I watched the first time I watched Planet of the Apes. I just felt like a kid.
Yep.
Now that I watched the new one with Marky Wahlberg, I'm like, this is the most racist fucking thing I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I haven't seen that, but those early ones were just sci-fi.
Listen, bro, the fucking Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, when they took the masks off underneath the tunnel in New York City, and I'm living in New York City.
Yeah.
So I'm fucking 7, and I'm living in New York City, and all of a sudden there's gorillas living underneath the fucking buildings because they showed the trains and they showed the Statue of Liberty, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, the statue was down. It's New York after the apocalypse. And it's run by apes and one good-looking fucking white dude.
Yeah.
I forget the blonde-head dude. I forget what his name was.
Charlton Heston was the first one, right?
Was he? Yeah, he was the first one.
That was so great, man. Remember the second one, Battle Beneath the Planet?
Beneath is my favorite one.
Yeah, where they're worshiping the nuclear bomb.
The nuclear bomb, and they take their skins off.
Yeah, that shit is creepy,
bro,
right?
Bro, that shit was fucking real.
Oh, that shit is creepy.
Like, you left there going, whoa, wait a second.
Yeah.
And they had that creepy music playing.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Beneath, Conquest.
Yeah. And then Return to the Planet of the Apes, I think, or something like that.
It was five of them.
Yeah, five of them. Yeah, Ape Day, man. My mom dropped me off at like 10 a.m.
10 a.m., dog. And you would sit there till 6:30.
All day.
Eating popcorn and fucking.
Yeah, but how much of it was the acid that creeped you out?
Well, at that time, no, you weren't doing acid.
Just kids.
If you went in there in the afternoon, you wouldn't be doing acid then. No. You'd be smoking pot.
It was. I think it was a way for our parents just to have a cheap babysitter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? 50 cents.
Yeah, nobody would bother you.
You're just in there.
You go with three of your friends. You leave there fucking fired up. You sit there and watch Dirty Harry and the second one.
Oh, yeah.
You leave there fucking. I remember taking a Cuban refugee one time. And that was the first time he was like, "Oh, you Clint Eastwood."
Yeah.
I heard about him in Cuba. I never saw one of his movies. So I go, come on. It's like $2 to get in.
Magnum Force.
That's right. He didn't speak English. It was like Dirty Harry and Magnum Force. But it was that scene where he goes into the coffee shop.
Oh, I love that.
He goes back in.
Is the car smoking?
Yeah. No, what does he say?
He says, is the car running? He says, how would I know? He goes, tailpipe. He goes, ooh, that's terrible. Exhaust pouring out of there.
No, the other one. See if you can find it, Lee, when he goes in. Dirty Harry coffee shop scene. Watch the coffee shop scene.
Let's check it out.
When he goes back into the coffee shop. This, when you're, think of being a kid.
Yeah.
Watching this. But here, for me, I went with my godfather, and afterward, yeah, we went someplace to eat. And while I'm watching the movie, he goes, put your hand out under the table.
Oh,
and I go, okay. And he puts a fucking, a 44 Magnum in my hand.
Oh, he had one?
And he goes, this is the gun that you saw in the movie. I'm like, holding this gun. I got to be, I don't know how old I am when I went to see that.
Put your hand under the table. Put just your hand a under fucking, the table. Just a he piece.
He took the fucking bullets out, and he gave me the gun to hold. My dick was so hard.
Here we go.
Yeah, it's either.
Oh, this sudden impact is the later one.
Oh, okay.
Let's check this out.
Yeah, check this out. You know the song? Okay. Yeah, check this out.
Yeah. God, I love him. Dirty Harry's were my favorite, dude. Look at the shades, gargoyles.
No, this ain't the same.
This is not it? Okay.
Hold on. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. This is it.
Oh, yeah. I love this. Oh. This is killer. Look. Oh, yeah. I love this.
You never saw this, did you, Lee?
No, I haven't yet.
This is great.
Oh, my fucking God.
How much sugar is you going to put in that thing?
Cup of diabetes. Look at that. There it is.
Jesus Christ.
Great scene. It's killing.
Now you're a fucking kid, you know.
Yeah.
You're lifting weights.
You did real good with that cop. Now I want everything. Money, watches, rings, everything. Oh. Quick, move!
You coming with me, Mom? We're gonna have us a little party, huh?
So, I love this. Look at this.
What you doing, pighead sucker?
Pighead sucker.
Yeah.
Every day for the last 10 years, Loretta there has been giving me a large black coffee. Today she gives me a large black coffee, only it's got sugar in it. A lot of sugar. I just came back to complain. How you boys put those guns down?
He's by himself. No backup.
Nope.
No partner. Nobody wanted to be his partner.
Four guys.
Well, we're not just going to let you walk out of here.
Okay.
Who's we, sucker? Smith and Wesson and me.
Oh my God, this is so great.
God damn it, Loretta.
This is great.
This is what American was being. Like, this was it. Like,
go ahead. Make my day.
This is it. This is it. Like, this is fucking as good as it gets.
It don't get any better.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
When you were a kid, this is what you went to see.
Oh.
You didn't go see a super fucking hero movie.
Fuck, I wouldn't capes. Go see
a
super.
Look what I saw as a kid.
Yeah.
You didn't have time for fucking superheroes.
Fuck your capes. You know? Go ahead. Make my day.
Then he does the other one where he explains the gun to him.
I don't. With all this excitement, I don't know how many shots are fired.
Did
I fire six shots or only five?
Ask him if Coffee is psychic.
And then the guy goes, "I gots to know." And he cocks back the hammer. Oh, that's one. Put that in at least six shots or five, man.
Go ahead. Six shots or five.
That Clint Eastwood.
This is too much.
Oh, dude.
Like, this is why.
He was my hero.
If you show this to kids, they won't go into a school because they know motherfuckers like this exist.
Yeah, yeah.
They're thinking now superheroes exist and shit. And by the time the superhero gets there, they're fucking...
Here it is.
This is crazy shit.
This is it right here.
This is it? Okay.
This is the all-time best scene by Clint Eastwood of all time. Insane. This is so good. Look at this. And all in San Francisco.
Now, this is all San Francisco?
Yeah, all San Francisco. That's what's amazing.
You were a kid, and he's shooting movies.
Yeah, right? All over town. Oh, here we go.
Usual?
And this guy did every fucking movie in the world.
Every movie.
Every
movie.
Not much.
He was the fucking salesman in the Outlaw Josie Wales.
Yeah, that guy's...
Hey, Jeffy, is that Tan Ford still parked across the front of the bank?
Tan Ford.
I love this. It's my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tan Ford.
Engine running?
I don't know. How can I tell?
Exhaust fumes coming out of the tailpipe.
Ooh, that's awful. Look at that pollution.
Tan! Dude!
Do me a favor, will you?
This is
cool. Call his telephone number.
Police department?
Yeah, tell him Inspector Callahan thinks there's a 211 in progress at the bank. Got it?
Got it.
Be sure and tell him it's in progress, right?
In progress. Yes, sir.
Dude, just genius. The acting, too.
Clint Eastwood destroyed the 70s.
Absolutely.
He destroyed the 70s.
Absolutely.
From the fucking Eager Sanction to this.
Yeah.
To fucking, I mean, he destroyed the fucking 70s and half of the 80s.
Every Which Way But Loose.
Every Which Way. The one with the fight. Every Which Way But Loose. Yeah, yeah, with the ape.
The gauntlet. Look at this.
He's eating a fucking hot dog.
Yeah.
That's as American as it gets. Yeah. Shooting people and eating a fucking hot dog. That's America, cocksucker.
With a killer hairdo. I love this scene. Taking dudes out.
And he always shot black people and nobody ever complained. The NCAACP, it was just accepted that Clint Eastwood shot black people.
Oh, my God. Here you go.
Great. I got to know.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
And that guy did 1,000 movies.
Yep.
That black dude has been 1,000 movies.
I love how there's just cars driving around. This is great.
He's not in any rush.
Nope.
He's just walking.
He's walking.
This guy did 1,000 fucking movies.
He really
did a James Bond movie.
Look at
He had plenty of time to grab that gun.
I know what you're thinking. Did he fire six shots or only five? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I've kind of lost track myself. But Ian, this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I got to know.
Oh. That's how the film opened. That's how
Can
the film
Can you believe
opened.
This shit, Lee? This is, I think, pressing this fucking guy, Outlaw Josie Wales with the Indian Chief.
Oh.
This is my all-time favorite. This is one of my all-time favorite scenes as a man. It's one of my all-time favorite scenes as a fucking film buff. Like, that scene with him and the Indian, to me, is just, I don't know who wrote it.
The guy's just fucking, look at all the classics he did, dude. You know? Just a line of
right
classics.
Right there, that first one, right there. Just listen to his verbiage, how he says it.
Oh, man, this scene, dude.
This is just American as can be. This is 77. I was fucking 14. The first time I saw this in the movie theater, and I nearly died. Like, I walked out of there, I wanted to be an Indian. Like, that day I was done. Like, I got to figure out how to become an Indian. Like, this is it. This is the only thing we have.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to be part of this shit. You know, he jumps in. Now, this guy's son has reached out to me.
Oh,
this
yeah?
guy did two movies. This, and he was the Indian in, you name it, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, my favorite.
Yeah.
Oh, so, Chief.
Chief. This is Chief.
Oh. Dude. Chief. Oh. Oh, here you go. I always wanted to look like Eastwood in these movies. You know? Walk around town like that with a hat. Fucking dirty beard.
I've seen this scene, I gotta say, 500 times. I've watched this movie.
Yeah.
I watched it 3 times 2 weeks ago. It was on, like, OFC with commercials and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I watch up to this while I leave, and I know it's coming back on at 11.
Yeah.
I'll come home and catch the beginning of this with the woman in Kansas, the salesman. This has 50 fucking good scenes when the Indian questions him.
Oh, man.
Look at this. Look at this.
Oh, yeah. 10 bears?
I am 10 bears.
Chief.
Spit.
Yeah.
I'm Josie Wales.
I have heard. You're the Grey Rider. You would not make peace with the Bluecoats. You may go in peace.
I reckon not.
I would wear one of those hats.
Me too.
And you will die.
Right?
I'd wear one of those. I think I'm half Comanche. I'd love to be a
fucking
Comanche.
I came here to die with you.
Sick.
I'll live with you. Dying ain't so hard for men like you and me. It's living that's hard. When all you've ever cared about has been butchered or raped. Governments don't live together. People live together. Governments, you don't always get a fair word or a fair fight. Well, I've come here to give you either one or get either one from you. I came here like this so you'll know my word of death is true. And my word of life is then true. The bear lives here, the wolf, the antelope, the Comanche, and so will we. And we'll only hunt what we need to live on, same as the Comanche does. And every spring, when the grass turns green and the Comanche moves north, he can rest here in peace, butcher some of our cattle, and jerk beef for the journey. The sign of the Comanche, that will be on our lodge. That's my word of life. And your word of death?
Here in my pistols, there in your rifles. I'm here for either one.
These things you say we will have. We already have.
That's true. I ain't promising you nothing extra. I'm just giving you life and you're giving me life. And I'm saying that men can live together without butchering one another.
God damn it.
Sick.
It's said that governments are chiefed by the double tongues. There is iron in your words of death for all Comanche to see, and so there is iron in your words of life. No signed paper can hold the iron. It must come from men. The words of 10 bears carries the same iron of life and death. It is good that warriors such as we meet in the struggle of life or death. It shall be life.
just a masterpiece, Joey.
Dog, I would faint right there. If I had to cut my hand and shake an Indian's hand, I would faint. But I'd have to do it. I'd have to keep it together and breathe.
Yeah, right?
Look at this shit.
Blood Brothers.
And they're shaking left hands, which is fucking really weird.
Yeah.
This is just fucking tremendous.
Oh, man.
You don't understand. I hold the American Indian like if I had to join, I don't want to be part of an organization. I won't even fucking go over and hang out with those guys over at comedy, whatever, where the podcasts are and shit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like it. Right. I don't like it. One of the, you know, it's weird the different people who talk to you in their life. When I was selling cars in 87, about a month before I got arrested, I was out of control, Dean.
Yeah.
Like, I was out of control on the blow. And I knew I had these guys at the dealership. I knew I was a good salesman. And I bought a car from them one day, and I fucking, they hit me with, like, all these bills, additional bills. They tried to rob me. And I went and grabbed the fucking sledgehammer and got on the cars on Saturday in front of all the customers. And I said, if I don't get my money in 10 minutes, I'm going to start breaking fucking windshields in here. So they gave me a check, and they sent me home for the day.
Yeah.
I remember I went home with this guy called Carlos Valverde. He got busted shortly after that for bank robbery. He was a beautiful Italian kid, Cuban-Italian kid, a Puerto Rican-Italian kid from Boston. And he was a bank robber at lunchtime. Like, he would rob a bank at lunch, go to lunch, rob a bank with his friends, and then go back to work like nothing happened.
Oh, man.
But they were hooked on heroin, these guys.
Yeah.
I'll never forget one day, he gave me the ride home. He asked me if he could use the bathroom. And he was in there for fucking an hour. And when he came out, I could tell what heroin was. I'd been around it, but the point of the story is that when I went back to work that Monday, the owner called me in the office and he sat me down. He was this old, cool, fucking white dude, you know, country boy. And he looked at me and he goes, has anybody told you? He goes, you're one of my favorite people here. When I come to work in the morning, sometimes I just sit here and watch the monitors and watch you out there fucking around with customers, how you talk to them and stuff.
Yeah.
He goes, but anybody ever tell you, you're just a born renegade?
Jesus. Like,
I fell in love with him.
Yeah.
He goes, you don't do nothing of what we tell you here.
Yeah.
But you still produce.
Yeah.
So I can't argue with you. You know what I'm saying?
I'm the same way, Jerry, when I sold the Harleys.
Yeah.
They go, you got to wear this. I'm like, nah. You got to do this. Oh, nah.
I did everything. I wouldn't go to sales meetings. Yeah,
all the other guys.
I just
want to
sell cars, bro.
Yeah, all the workers would be like, well, fucking Dean doesn't do any of that. Yeah, but Dean sold 18 bikes this week.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I would fucking kill them. Like, yeah. I remember still having the, like, every month some fucking Anthony Robbins comes in tight.
Oh, those
to
guys.
Increase your sales.
Oh, the worst,
and
right?
And the whole sales force goes like suckers, and you stay there by yourself selling cars like a motherfucker while they're at learning. Yeah. I wasn't into none of that shit.
Me either.
Like, I went to one Anthony Robbins seminar. I got robbed.
Yeah.
I tried to, I took the notebook home. I did the exercises. I was still snorting coke. It didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, if the notebook didn't work, I'm going to give you $1,000 to walk on coals. You're fucking crazy. I'm going to burn my feet. Fucking walk on coals.
Well, you know, the thing about sales, man, you got to understand survival. And if people don't have survival skills, they'll be terrible at sales. Because if they've got like backup plans or money in the bank or family or whatever, they're going to be horrible because they don't have any like, I've got to sell this, you know?
It's really weird. I've enjoyed my life because of the decision I made early on that I wasn't going to work for an hourly wage.
Right.
Like, I made a decision early on that here's my life, brother. Some months you make $2,000 and some months you make 10. But I'd rather live that uncertainty than live under an income roof.
Under a thumb.
I did not ever want to have $15 an hour, $600 a week. I knew exactly what I was going to bring home every week. I lived under a budget. Even back then, when I was selling cars at 25, I was reckless in the sense that if I wanted to live the way I wanted to live, I had to sell cars.
Yeah.
It's a desperation thing. It's a survival thing.
Yep.
Now, how did I have to live in those days? First off, I had to go to fucking Coco's every night and get a burger and a fucking Coco Loco.
Yeah.
That was, you know, I had to eat lunch out. I had to buy suits. I had to buy clothes. I had to pay for dry cleaning. I had to pay rent. I had to have a nice place. You know, it wasn't fucking the Taj Mahal. It was a bedroom I shared with guys, you know, like a three-bedroom house with guys. But, you know, I want to do coke 5 nights a week. I want to be able to go to a bar and drink $50. So I would make my own budget of what I need every month in my head, and that's what I would strive for. But most dealers learn how to, you know, like most car dealerships in those days would give you a draw on the 15.
Oh, remember that? It was like a loan.
It's like a loan.
Yeah.
So it's like, so what are your bills every month, Lee? My bills are this. Okay, I'm going to give you that on the 15th every month. But on the 30th, it's the wash.
So anything, if you had any over, did you ever owe them money?
Like no. If you didn't sell any money? No, your goal is to double that, what they gave you.
Right, that's your goal.
So what you do is, like people like me and Dean did, where the first 2 weeks, we told everybody to suck our dick. We went to concerts.
Yeah.
We took that check from the 30th, paid our rent, and for 2 weeks, we don't give a fuck. We don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like, sales call. There's a guy out there. He has an envelope filled with money. He's looking to buy a car. Well, go sell him a car. I'm not doing anything for that. You know what I'm saying? So after you got that $1,500 draw, now you got to make $1,500. And that's when I would go to work.
Yeah.
Because that's when people buy a car, the last 2 weeks of the month.
Absolutely.
The first week is when they go look. They kick tires.
The looky loose.
Unless they run into a salesman.
Yeah.
When I learned that term, you know, when somebody tells you they're not buying a car for 6 months, and all of a sudden you call them up 2 days later and they're like, I bought a car. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
And you're like, they ran into a salesman. Now I got to become a salesman. I was their friend.
100%.
I opened the hood. I didn't try to close them because I thought, fuck you. After that, everybody got closed on the first try.
Yeah.
I berated you the first time in there because I knew I only had one shot at you statistically.
Yep.
Through the stats, I know I only got one shot at you. Yeah. There were a few people that you ask them one time, they back off.
One in a million.
And you back off, and then you take this coupon, and you take their name and give them a brochure, and you call them up, and they come back 2 weeks later with their kid and buy the car. Yeah, those people do exist. But 80% of the time, you got one shot at these fucking savages.
That's it.
So you got to, you know what? Fuck all that nice guy shit. Be nice, and then before they leave, you know, I had a friend, Tom Ohm. He was a loser. This guy was just a loser.
Yeah.
I was, you know, we did a podcast a few weeks ago about comedy, and I really had to think about it before I came on. And I remember when I got separated, I had a spare bedroom. I could not afford this place by myself. When my wife moved out and I was first doing comedy, like, my mortgage was out of fucking control compared. And he begged me to move in. And I'm like, you ain't moving in with me. He was one of these guys that came here for 6 months, would get in trouble, and then go back to Colorado and get in trouble for six months. And he would tell me, oh, you got to go to California and sell cars. You fucking surf half the day and you sell cars the other half the day across the street. People come in and give you money for cars. By the way, let me $100 and I'll give it to you on Tuesday. You just came back from California. You were selling cars every day.
Yeah.
The guy was just Benny the Mooch, you know? Yeah. But that dude could sell a fucking car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, his lifestyle was drinking, drugs. He could sell a car because his addiction. See, those guys that are addicted, they can sell.
Yep.
Those cracked little motherfuckers, you put them on the phone 6 hours a day, just enough till they snap.
Yeah.
Till they need that coke rock again.
Ooh. Glengarry, Glenn Ross style.
Yeah, always be closing.
Always be closing.
Always be closing.
So, like for the car I have now, I'm not going to go back there, but I bought two cars from the same salesman.
Yeah.
You guys never thought, like, oh, let me be nice and treat and, like,
you wouldn't worry about them
coming back?
They come back. Once they buy a car. Look, I bought 5 cars from this guy. 6 cars from the same fucking guy up there in Subaru. I believe in it. I believe in that system. But most people don't have that belief. They're fucking animals.
Yep.
And it killed me because this is the deal. Like, if you live in Studio City, right? We're in Studio City right now. And you and I sold cars at Studio City Subaru. And you live in Burbank. And you come into Studio City to look at me. I'm a mom and pop operation. I can't do the same deal a big dealer downtown could do.
Right.
Like, when you go down those streets and you see those big dealers like Van Nuys, you know.
They're
selling 1,000 cars a month. So they'll take smaller deals. I hate those mooches.
Yeah.
That'll go across town and pay $300 cheaper for the same car.
Oh.
And then can't come to us for service.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll tell you can come to us.
Yeah.
We're going to put you last on the list.
Yeah.
It's going to take you 8 hours of service, and we're probably going to bang you out for something every time you come in for being a douchebag.
I had this dick one time, Joe. He came in and rocked me for about 7 hours. And, you know, let me see it again in the sun. Is it blue or green? Do I want blue or green? All day out in the 110 sun of fucking Van Nuys. And then the next day he went to another place. And then he rode the motorcycle over to show me on Monday. Hey, look, I ended up picking up one. You weren't working yesterday. And it just clueless that we work on commission. I was like, dude, I just spent 7 hours with you. Oh, well, yeah, I know. But I was like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, they don't know.
They got no idea.
So after a while, you get an attitude problem.
Oh, man, you do.
I think they know because like, it's like being a server and they stiff you on a tip. I think everyone has.
Some people are dumb. They think you're getting paid hourly, too, or something like some kind of salary. But no, it's pure commission.
I've always tipped.
Yeah. Oh,
and
hell
since
yeah.
Since I was a kid, I've always tipped because my mother taught me to tip since I was a kid. What's a tip? A dollar, give them two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, what's the real tip? 20% is $6? Give them eight. Give them the 10. What's the $4 difference going to make? You know, make somebody's day, and it comes back to you tenfold. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, who cares?
Just throw them a fucking 10. When I go to these comedy clubs on the weekends, before I leave, I take $420s.
Yeah.
I love those 20s. And then I go to a store and get like five 10s. And you're getting 10s and 20s. Those Uber drivers, I give them a $10 tip. Yeah. I get a 5-star rating. Who gives a fuck? And they're happy. I give them cash. It's off the books. Nobody knows nothing.
Yep.
What am I going to give them a tip on the app? Like some fucking jabroni? That's what a mutt does. Let me give them a tip on an app. No, give them a fucking 5. Yeah. What do you give a fuck? You're going out with your girl. You want to impress the fucking girl. Throw the guy a 5. You make his night.
Yeah, you make his night big time.
Even if it's a fucking fin, you make his fucking night.
Yep.
But people have no clue about that. That life, you know, I was telling somebody today, we're not in the comedy business. We're in the karma business.
Yeah.
When you're in the plumbing business, you're in the karma business. When you're a masseuse therapist, you're in the karma business. When you're an acupuncturist, you're in the karma business, okay? Today I went to the acupuncture. I told him today for the first time because I remembered. I go, my shoulders have been a little slick lately. Ever since I've been kickboxing, I have no power in my punches. I mean, I'm an old man. I'm not looking to knock nobody out. But because the extension hurts a little bit on the way out, and lately I've been falling asleep on them and they kind of hurt.
Oh, yeah.
He put some needles in there. He cut me. He goes, all right, let's get out of here. And also he goes, wait up. Are you in a rush? I go, no. He goes, let's cup your shoulders.
Yeah.
That's priceless.
Yeah. Help out.
That's priceless.
Go in the extra mile.
Think, you know, when I go to jiu-jitsu and classes from 12 to 1:15 and you're still there at 2 rolling with your teacher, you know. There was a place I went to look at one day and the guy told me, he goes, class starts at 12. I don't want nobody here till 5 till 12.
Oh.
I'll never forget that. I was like, you know what? I don't need to come here. Because you're not a real teacher.
Yeah. You're just fucking
punching minutes. And bro, if class would end at 7 to 1, he would end at 5 to 1, and he'd have a suit on at 1:05, and he'd be out the door. You got to stick around and answer questions and roll around with the students, and that's why he had a shitty school.
Yep.
He didn't know that he wasn't in the time business; he's in the fucking karma business.
Yeah, he's trying to sell minutes.
Well, how do you guys deal with people treat like in the karma business when people treat you poorly? How do you stay positive and be like, oh, well, and like not give up? Like, fuck it. If ever people are going to treat me like this, then I'll just give them this.
One of the greatest lines that's ever said in a movie was in Bronx Tale when the kid's pissed. And he goes, that fucking kid owes me $20. He goes, it costs you $20 to get rid of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got 3 or 4 people who I lent money to out of the kindness of my heart and never even called back to say a friendly fuck you.
Yep. That's it.
You know what? I know you're broke, Dean.
Yeah.
If you come to me 3 times with $50, if I give you $300 and you come to me 3 times with $50, 3 weeks in a row on a Friday, like you said you were going to, I'm the type of guy that says, hey, forget the other yard and a half.
Yeah.
I know you're going through rough times. I know I'm taking a lot out of you by this $50. I just want you to stick to your man word.
That's it.
You know, for years I was a punk. For years, I was a fucking punk. I was a fucking punk because I was snorting cocaine. And it was letting me do things that was against my manhood. Then something happened. I became a man like those Indians. Like the man Clint Eastwood says he is. I didn't have to go to rehab. I made a decision. And then I made other decisions with my life. That's what it is to become a man, is making decisions, sticking by them, and that's it. This is the decision I've made, and I live and I die by it. That's why the song My Way by Frank Sinatra is so fucking emotional, because at the end of the day, you know, what did Winston Churchill say? Success is moving from one area to another area and staying excited about a subject. It's something like that. He made a great quote.
Right.
You know, we live in the same realm. We do podcasts. I do a movie. I do a TV show 1 week. Then we go on the road for a week. I never really wanted a job. I love going on the road, but when you do it 4 weeks in a row, it becomes a job.
Yeah. Yeah,
now
exactly.
You're a job. That fifth week, you're like, what did I take this week for?
Yeah.
And it's a hell week that you didn't want, but you took it because of the money. These are choices that you learn about later on. Like when to stop becoming a whore. You have to be a whore first to stop becoming a whore.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
You have to be a whore to stop being a whore.
100%.
You know, that whore that I had in me for comedy, when I stopped being a whore, I became a comic. But for fucking 10 years, you got to be a whore.
Yeah.
You know, you got to take $200 when you know the guy's walking with $3,000 in your pocket. You know, you got to take the small $200 because in your mind, you're saying to yourself, you might have got this $3,000, but you're only going to do this 3 more times. 10 years from now, I'm going to get $3,000 for 15 years.
Yeah.
So that's what happens now. That's how your mind looks at it when you become a man. You know what I'm saying? I was a whore in comedy. We did everything. We come back, we get off of Planet 6. We're on stage at 8 for $1.50 somewhere.
That's me every week.
Tired.
Yeah.
Tired, hungover.
Yeah.
No shower, 4-hour plane ride.
Another spot.
Yep. It's a spot.
It's a spot.
But that's for anything when you first start painting.
Yeah.
And when you first start painting, until you get discovered, you sell those pictures for $10. One day you're sitting in your apartment, you're like, I'm getting $300,000 a picture now. I wish I'd go back and knock on Dean's door and get my $290. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
But you had to do that to put it out there.
You got to do it, man. It's like, I flew in from, Nashville Sunday morning, 9:30, straight to the house, start podcasting, you know, then do a spot, then go see Judas Priest. It's just like you got to keep moving when you're at that stage because, you know, somebody else, if you say no to the spot, somebody else is going to say yeah, and then the calls stop, you know?
Yeah.
That's what's weird when the calls stop. So you got to always go, yeah, I'm there. Even though I know I'm going to be completely tore up, but I get something
I'll
out of it.
I'll sleep tonight.
Yeah.
I'll sleep
that's
tonight.
Exactly.
That's the attitude. I'll sleep tonight.
Yeah, I'll sleep tonight, man.
And that's it. Last month, you invited me to do a show with you that I left there blown away.
Oh,
you got great press on what you did. It was the AC/DC reunion,
Bon Scott tribute.
The Bon Scott tribute. And you let myself and Bill and
Maron
be a fucking part of the show. I was a little upset because he let everybody else play on stage, and you should have given me a flute, something. I could have played the flute on Soul Stripper, you know what I'm saying?
Right?
Something. Yeah, something.
That would have been hilarious.
But it was just such a fucking electric night, Dean, and I still want to thank you because, like I told the podcasters before, the people who listen, that it made me realize that I was missing live music. Last night I was pissed. When you texted me and said you were a Priest, I was like, God damn it.
Yeah.
But would I have really gone after a show? I'm tired.
I know.
The baby jumped me as soon as I walked.
That's why I figured you weren't there, you know.
The baby jumped. Listen to
Columbus.
After 3 days, it's like, as soon as I walk in now, she's right. And I walked in at 9.
Night?
In the morning.
Oh, in the morning,
They were leaving at 10.
Oh.
So that first hour, she was all over me, telling me about a week, the pictures. We hung up pictures. My office is just covered in fucking kid pictures.
Yeah.
And then they left, which gave me 2 hours to run my errands, fill up the tank, get some weed. I went to the bed and got the fucking chemotherapy. I did, you know. I went and got a little fucking acai juice, whatever the fuck it was, a little kombucha juice. I went and got some kombucha.
Yeah.
And I went home and I just did my weekly errands, put the schedule together for the week and shit. And they came back throwing the heat at 1:30. Like, I usually take a nap. Wasn't happening. She came in that door right to the office, started with Octonauts.
Oh, my God.
Some other TV show. Then we ended up in her room, watched another movie. Then I had to take off a frozen yogurt.
Yeah.
And we sat in there for 35 minutes talking about life and her birthday party. It's a year away.
Oh, wow. A year away.
Yeah. She's already planning her six-year-old birthday. But it's in fucking January. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And then we went home. We watched another movie, you know, and then she went in the tub and I'm the one that's got to drink. You know, it's just one of those nights.
Yeah.
I know that if I leave, I disrupt the whole patois of the fucking evening. So now after 9, if I could have gone somewhere last night, I would have gone to the store. I thought about going down to the store. Red Band was doing the show. But back to your little AC/DC tribute. I mean, you just had a fucking insane lineup.
Oh, it was crazy.
Of musicians that I had seen before but didn't really know.
Right.
But it didn't matter. The guy behind the drums was sensational.
Yeah.
You know, you had the two bass players of Death, Nikki Sixx and Rudy Sarzo.
Unbelievable.
You know, you had fucking the guy playing the guitar.
Oh, Josh Z from San Francisco.
That guy doing the Angus licks.
Oh.
You could tell he had bought Power Rage when it first came out.
Yeah.
Like, he had been playing that song. He was a real fucking Angus guy. Like,
I've known that guy 30 years.
Yeah, he was solid on the fucking Angus licks.
Oh.
He was solid as can be. I mean, I sat there in the sidelines and I was like, I didn't know what to expect, but I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? I wasn't expecting that at all. I was expecting six fucking guys smoking in the boys' room type attitude.
Yeah.
Fucking notes being thrown, bad vocals. It was tight. You were tight. You were very tight, you know?
Oh, man. We only rehearsed one night, too, the night before, you know? But those guys are all pros, you know? Steve played in the Black Crows for, you know, his whole life. And then Michael Devon played in Whitesnake, the bass player. And then, you know, Billy Rowe from Jet Boy, who'd been on stage his whole life doing the Malcolm. And then, of course, Scott Ian from Anthrax, who's a Malcolm freak and has Malcolm tattooed on him and plays rhythm guitar like Malcolm. These guys, all they got to do is throw on the record for, you know, an hour and go, oh, yeah, okay, it goes there and there and there. And then we stepped on stage and it was, you never know what's going to happen. Gear can break. People could leave, not show up, whatever, you know, because we did it when I was 50 and everybody came for the comedy. And then when we did the AC/DC, a lot of people left.
Really?
Yeah, I think because it was a huge, mostly comedy fans of that one, because it was at the time my podcast wasn't as big as it is now, so it didn't have as many rock and rollers. But this time, if you look at the photos, the first 3-4 rows, people are all wearing AC/DC shirts. And I went to the front door when they opened the front door, and I was greeting everybody as they came in. And people flew in from, you know, Florida, Tampa, Detroit, Portland, Philly, New York. Guys came from all over the place for this thing. It was pretty emotional for me because I was like, wow, this is insane. You know, I mean, I couldn't believe it. We got a pro video, if you look at it, of Kicked in the Teeth Again with Burr on drums, Nikki Sixx on bass. It's on YouTube. And I think it's one of my favorite, hands down, top favorite three things I've ever done in my life. It was just loony, you know? And then you crushed it doing comedy. You were crushing it.
I didn't crush it. It was a horrible set.
Oh, you were doing great. Element. It was great.
I made some girl cry.
Oh.
People were upset.
You know? Oh, people loved it.
People were fucking upset. I could tell Rudy Sarzo's wife was looking at me weird afterward.
Oh, no way, man. Yeah, you had a great set, man. You had a great set.
I don't think they went into it. They didn't like the set about me talking about molesting my wife. They froze. They were rockers, but they were still that white where they didn't know, like, what the fuck. But I had a great night. I didn't even care about the set. I was just honored to be part of it and just to...
God, I loved you having you there. It's 40-year anniversary of Power Age. 40 fucking years. And in 2 years, will be 40 years that Bon Scott passed. So I used to do this AC/DC tribute to Bon every year in San Francisco because it was right around the time of my birthday. My birthday's February 3rd. He died on the, I believe, the 16th.
I thought it was the 19th on my birthday.
No, 19th.
He died on my birthday.
Yeah, he died on your birthday. So every year I would do this. And then when I moved to L.A., I didn't really do it anymore because I just didn't have, you know.
Now, he died in February of 80.
Right. Yep. February of 80. And then the Back in Black comes out like 6 months later. Unbelievable. Black,
yeah, I remember going to see them August 2nd.
Right, there you go.
August 1st in the Palladium.
Of 80, 79?
80.
80.
Oh, after he died.
Yeah. He died, and 6 months later, they had a fucking that album. I still remember buying it and hearing it the whole fucking, like, it didn't stop. It caught on like fucking fire.
Flamethrower, dude.
It really did.
It's really bizarre, like, when you think about how no band has lost a singer, got a new singer, and sold 100 million records. It's the number two selling record of all time, I believe, behind Thriller. To do that is insane. That you can't even add up the odds of that. There's just no fucking way. You know? Hey, here's a record with a new singer.
I never knew it was number two.
Number two behind Thriller. Yeah, I think it goes Thriller, Back in Black, Eagles' Greatest Hits, I believe is.
Now, have you read the new Bon Scott book?
I have, about Bon writing the stuff. Yeah, I believe he wrote that record 100%.
What is the conflict with the book?
There's no conflict. What it is is.
I heard that it was the book reveals that he wanted to quit AC/DC.
Yeah, I mean, but we're also going off of interviews of friends. You know, like when you hang out and maybe you have a long run of shows and you go, you know, I don't think I want to do stand-up anymore. And you tell me that, and then the next day you're normal. People say stuff like
that. I do it every 3 months.
Right, right. So I think if you interview a guy who is Bon's friend, you know, and he's like, yeah, I don't know about this. I want to leave the band. You don't ever take that to heart. People have weird things go on in
their
life.
We have insecurities.
Yeah, we do.
So whether it's your singer or bass player, you know, in your mind, things just become bigger. You know, you see it. The drugs and the alcohol don't help.
Nope.
Your impression of yourself or what you're doing, you know, I mean, that didn't help. And at that time, he was the biggest fucking jammy on that band. I think Angus is young.
Yeah.
I mean, Angus is clean, right?
Yeah.
Never drank a booze in his life.
Coca-Cola, tea, cigarettes.
That's it.
Yep.
Yeah, like that type of shit. But Bon was on a different level. I mean, you know, I spoke to Josh Wolf last week, and he was talking about how he got lit onto Let There Be Rock, the album.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe how good it is. Like, he missed that whole thing. And, you know, when I read their stuff, and I found out that, you know, a whole lot of Rosie was a true chick.
Right.
He really did fuck a fat chick one night, and he wrote all those lyrics. A lot of them, right?
Like, he wrote them all.
All.
100%.
90% of the writing. And he did what we do. He told the story in his songs. He was a brilliant fucking drunk. He was just, you know, yesterday I had Power Rage on.
Yeah.
You know,
I can't believe those lyrics.
I
really can't.
You can't, but the piano, now.
Yeah, yeah.
Piano,
I tied my baby to the railroad track.
Now.
Getting on down the line.
Now.
It's your love that I want.
It's
your love.
All that shit is just Overdose.
Oh, Overdose.
It's one of my all-time favorite fucking songs.
Oh.
That's on Let There Be Rock. And on
Overdose is incredible.
And then on Power Rage, they also have a type of a ballad.
On Power Rage, they have
Bullet to Bite On.
Oh, yeah, give me a Bullet
Jesus
to Bite On.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I'll make believe it's you.
Oh, my God. Oh. Jesus Christ. He just popped up with some shit that was just, it was funny because this morning when I got up at 5:59 on the dot.
Yeah. I can always tell when you're up.
Made some coffee. I called you like at 7. Yeah. I don't give a fuck, Jack.
I don't care.
I called Lee, woke his ass up.
I don't care.
Him back at 8, he was still sleeping. Get up, bitch.
That's when we get the quality conversations, yeah, though, before up, the motor's moving.
Get up, bitch. The motor is moving. I've already done a cup and a half of coffee. I've already smoked 5 pop pipe fills. I've chewed 2 pieces of nicotine gum. I've tweeted. I've answered tweeted. My agents know what to do for the week. They got the instructions for the week. They're all sent on missions.
Yeah, yeah.
I told one agent I better have my fucking money today. I don't give a fuck what they got to do. And I got home from kickboxing, and the thing was there in overnight. They had sent it on Friday.
Awesome.
Check from Santa Ana. I still haven't gotten paid.
What?
Yeah, it kills me sometimes. That's why I told him. I said, hey, man, I pay you deposits. When I get back, I can give you the commission quickly so there's no misunderstandings.
Yeah.
I've heard of clients getting behind on, ooh, what they end up owing after a few weeks.
That's a dumb move. You got to do it immediately.
Yeah,
because
immediately.
Or else it's hard to get it out of your pocket. You know?
Where's that fucking Tony Bennett, Lee?
The lead dog.
He's got bronchitis.
I think it's gone now mostly.
He's going to the lung doctor.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bad situation.
Shit,
you have
dude.
No idea.
Oh, no.
I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear.
Matt DePlusis, Nicholas Jorgensen, Elliot Smith, bad motherfucker, Chris Way, Uki Spooky, Fire Goddess Bet, my main man, UFC Arabic, fucking Adam Pistone, my brother from Chicago, Bob Lalingus, and a happy birthday to my brother who came out to the shows in Columbus, Jay Bish, over there in fucking Pittsburgh, running things and shit. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes people start running things. So now, are you thinking of doing this AC thing again next year?
You know, I was talking to Burr about it, and I was thinking, like, I mean, I'm such a lunatic, but that thing was pretty big. And it got a lot of press, and it was done out of the heart and just fun. I was thinking it's going to be 40-year anniversary of Bon Scott Gone. There's a way we could do it, like at the Forum, like a big fucker with me, you, Marin, and Burr doing comedy again, and like some, like just a collection of cool rock stars like Josh Homme, Queens of the Stone Age, let's say, Nikki Six again, get Dave Grohl would be great on something like this, some big dudes, and really pump it for a couple months and do the Forum, you know. Burr said there's a way where they can seed it for like 6,000, but to make a full tribute, one more big daddy for Bon Scott, like the best singer ever, man. Really glorify it for Bon, you know? I think that would be rad.
So in all, like when you had your bands,
yeah,
was Bon a big influence in your music?
Oh, God, yeah. I got him tattooed on my fucking body. I mean, when I saw AC/DC, the first time I saw him was on the Power Age tour and in 78. And when I saw him, everybody was into Angus. That was cool. Angus was cool, but to me, it was like, what's up with that dude up there? He had tattoos. No one had tattoos. Big old parrot. He had that weird vest on, no shirt, and he was up there like, all right! And I was like, what? That guy's like a fucking outlaw. You know, I was attracted to him. You know, Angus was cool, but to me, I was like, what's up with that dude, man? I'd never seen a guy like that before. Just, he looked like he worked for the band. Yeah.
It's funny because when I caught him in 80 or 79 on the Highway to Hell tour.
Oh, yeah, 79.
August 4th of 79.
With Priest?
No, with Ted.
Oh, Ted opening. Yeah, that's right.
Ted opening for Ted. I still remember like how great they were, but him running around the audience with Angus on his shoulders.
Yeah.
Like, nobody was doing that.
Nobody.
Like, nobody was doing that.
Nope. You know?
And he did it at the greatest arena of the world at that time. Like, news spread. it was the New York Daily News the next day, like, you know, yeah, a review on the show. I remember looking at, I would always look at, there was something that gave me a review of shows. I don't know if it was a magazine or a newspaper.
Right.
And it's saying that this is one of the best shows that had come to New York, and it, for the first time in a long time, it wasn't the headliner who, like, I still remember the review on Van Halen that time with Black Sabbath.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they, the headline was like, Black Sabbath is broken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like shocked, because I thought the same thing when I left there that night, like something wasn't right.
Yeah.
Either that or Van Halen was that good.
Yeah, I think it was a combo both.
Yeah, oh, man. It was a combo both. So there's sometimes shows that you don't know when you leave there. If Blacks, you know, like that time, like every time I saw Aerosmith, they were just bad.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It didn't matter. I could see them with a fucking preschool group with the fucking fourth annual quintet band, and they were fucking bad. They were sloppy. Oh, the yeah. music was off key.
Yeah, yeah.
Like one time I saw them at the Meadowlands, and we left.
Yeah.
Like, they were so bad, we had to leave. Like, we got to go. I got the four songs, we got to go. This is fucking terrible. They just could not cut it. And then I went again. It's just so weird how you make. I want to go see. Now, did Michael Schenker come? Nobody went.
Yeah, I came. It was you and I had just got home from, where were we last?
Santa Ana that night? No.
No, we flew home from some, Albuquerque. It was that day. And it was the week of the Bon Scott thing, so I was tore up. So we and did.
Where was it? It was
Anaheim. So you and I did the AC/DC thing, then we flew immediately to Albuquerque. We did the three shows, then we flew home, and I was just dust, you know? I was just like, ugh. I wanted to go, but it was all the way down there at Orange County. It's
I
tough.
Don't know if I want to go to the Hollywood Bowl this summer.
I'm getting in. Whatever you want to see.
What shows do you? Who's coming?
I'll send the list to
Let's
you.
Let's get the fucking lineup for the Hollywood Bowl. Up there. Let's see what the fucking schedule is.
Yeah, we got to get you in there.
Let's pick a church concert so we can go and fucking
that'd
commit.
Be great.
Get Mauricio Alvarado to make some pins.
Yeah, right? I saw him last night. It was cool to see him. There was a lot of rockers there last night, man. Tom Morello was there. Kerry King from Slayer. Everybody was out to see the Priest last night, man. You know, they know. And then Priest just, they just announced a summer tour with Deep Purple. Yeah, with Ian Gillan. Oh, man. We might have to see that.
I don't know. I don't know if I can go see Deep Purple. Richie Blackmore is creepy as fuck.
He's not in there anymore.
Oh, he's not
no,
in there.
No, they got that, the guy from, Dixie Dregs. Okay, here we go. So there's the start of the season. I'm really bummed I'm missing that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is Paul Simon's coming?
I don't want to see fucking
No, Paul not Simon. At all. I'm just like, Kevin Hart, dude. Wow. That'd be wild to see that in there. Oh, Rod Stewart. Cyndi Lauper. Man.
You don't want to do the Grease sing-along, Joey?
Oh.
Where's Rod Stewart, Cyndi Lauper?
That's June 25, 26.
Wow.
Yeah, dude. Might have to see that.
Yeah.
But we're doing Vegas. When is that? Is that that same time?
No, the 12th and 13th.
Okay, Okay, got it. Keep going down. Let's look here. Let's see here. Annie. That's page two. Let's see. Page two.
I can't even see this
shit. Randy Newman. Wild.
That's short people got no reason to live.
Yep,
fuck
short
that.
People got
I'm going to go there and pay $40 to see one fucking song. Fuck him.
Harry Connick Jr., Dave Matthews.
No.
Yeah. No. Oh, Beck. Oh, Ozzy. Oh, man, we'll go to that. Ozzy and Stone Sour, October 11th. Let's go to that. What do you think?
Yeah, who's Stone Sour?
Stone Sour is the guy from, you know, the band that wears the mask. He has his own band. He's the singer, yeah. And then Ozzy. Now, that'd be a good one. Beck would be great. I'd go see that. But that, you know, like, they add in stuff, Joey. So
Yeah. This is preliminary.
Right. Exactly. Oh, man.
Like, you guys, I always hear people talk about their favorite comedy clubs to perform in.
Yeah.
But what if you guys could see a concert anywhere, where would you guys go see? Where would you like to see a concert?
Oh, man, Red Rocks is the number
Red
one
Rocks
for me.
Red Rocks is where I saw a couple bands. That was a great spot.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, let's be honest. there's some places that are aesthetically cool.
Yeah.
Like Red Rocks is an aesthetically cool place. And miraculously, the sound is phenomenal in there. Like, they've done God's a great job. That's
there, dude.
But there's just places that are just right.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
That gorge in Seattle, you ever go there?
Yeah, I went there one time. Man. That was yeah. nice.
Yeah.
You know, I really liked Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
But I really liked smaller venues.
The Fillmore is my favorite on the planet. Okay.
And we've discussed before, I was always a Palladium guy.
Oh yeah.
In New York City. I don't know what it sat at that time. What did the Palladium in New York sit at that time? 1980
capacity.
Yeah, 1980 capacity at the Palladium Theater.
Palladium's
in New York or New Jersey?
New York City.
Legendary, man, Palladium.
Because I can't imagine that place being 1800, and that's where I saw Ozzy and fucking right. Judas Priest, and I saw Iron Maiden there on the first album, and I saw, Killers. The second
Killers.
One.
Oh yeah, you saw Paul Di'Anno?
Saw Paul Di'Anno. I saw an array of bands there. The Def Leppard I saw there.
High and Dry?
High and Dry. I think, On Through the Night.
Oh, On Through the Night, rad.
On Through the Night, and then High and Dry, I think. I gotta think. High and Dry, I saw them a couple times. It'll probably be hard to find.
I think I found it. I think it says 3,400.
Yeah.
There you go.
Can you imagine seeing Judas Priest?
Oh, man.
Ozzy Osbourne in a place that holds 3,400 seats.
Yeah.
Like, how lucky was I?
And then, I know, right?
What was the other ones? Like, if you saw them somewhere else, would it be 50,000? Like, is that...
No.
Like, the Garden, Madison Square Garden. Like
15,000.
20,000. Yeah, 18,000.
Yeah.
That's a lot of sound. That's a lot of bounce. That's a lot of fucking detraction. That's a lot of people in the audience. That's a lot of noise.
Yeah.
To see somebody in a 3,400-seat theater... It's like going to a movie theater. Like what it was. It was just a big movie theater.
Yeah, that's like the Warfield in San Fran. I saw everybody there, you know.
What does it seat, do you think?
I think it's 2,800 or something. Yeah. It's funny because I did it with Russell Peters a couple of years ago. When I was a kid, I played there opening up for a band, Bad English. And then years later, I did it as a comedian. I go, this place is small. Like, when you're a kid, it seems huge, right? Like, the Palladium seemed huge when you're a kid.
Bad English with John Waite.
Yeah.
You opened for them?
Yeah, I opened for them, yeah.
I'm Missing You, 84?
Yeah.
That band, or was it later on?
Bad English, that was his.
He had a good band. Bad English was a band that got put together. It was like two from one band.
Yeah, I think Neil Sean.
Right, right.
Yeah, man. And the drummer, Dean Castronova, saw my band and said, man, you guys got to open for us. And we opened for him like the next night at the Warfield. You know, we were just kids. We're like, holy shit.
How old were you?
I was like 20, you know, 18, 19, right around there or something. I don't know, 21 or whatever. But I thought, oh, man, we're on our way. We're playing the Warfield.
And what was the pay on something like that in those days for an opening?
I think it's always like $750, $500.
For four guys.
Yeah, four guys. But we would have done that free.
Yeah, for free.
Free. Yeah. Dude, you know the bragging rights around town, like to play the Warfield or the Fillmore back then as a local unsigned band? That's like a big deal, man. That's like a big deal. Because, you know, signed bands would bring other bands. There was never any happening, you know, spots. But they didn't have a band open them for them. So we got to do it. And, man, it was... I still remember it like it was yesterday.
700. It's amazing the sacrifices. Like, yeah, you're right. That's why Lee and I were talking about a triple run earlier.
Yeah.
You know, like a triple run. And I go, I think, Lee, that you're not ready mentally...
Oh,
for a triple run, because it's a little
take you out.
It's a little big difference of a change.
Even for like a weekend, you think it'd be crazy?
Just the driving. It would be crazy for you because you couldn't believe you're doing comedy at this place.
Yeah, they still doing those, Jerry?
Yeah, they still do them. You know, like there was a place in West Virginia I walked in one time, and there was a ping pong table. I had to get on top of the stairs. And in the middle, it started buckling. I'm 300 fucking pounds.
Oh, my God.
290 or something at the time, 1998. You can't really handle that. At the time, I was doing comedy 8 years.
Yeah.
I was at the store already, and I remember walking in there going, what did I fucking sign up for?
Yeah, yeah.
Because Creative Entertainment was out of Charlotte at the time. They run the Charlotte Club. They have a club, and they have a couple clubs. But back then, their specialty, which is still, he still has a few left. But in the 90s, he had hundreds of one-nighters.
Wow.
Hundreds.
Right, like Barry Katz style, just all over. Barry had those all over the East Coast, I heard, and he would send all these guys out on these runs.
Right, he would have those college runs. Yeah. Yeah, just these places, but you don't know what hell is till you get there. You know, when you go to D.C., it's completely different than going to an off-city in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Where they're all coal miners and they all have mascara on and they're looking at you on the stage and you're like, holy shit.
Do you mean they have coal on their face? They don't have mascara on their
face. They have coal on their face. They just got out of the fucking coal mine. Oh. You can't handle that.
And they're not gonna like the jokes that I've been doing. Like the four jokes that I have.
No.
How many you got? Four?
Probably something like that, maybe five.
No, they'll eat you up alive. After the eighth minute, your legs will start trembling. Once you say you're Jewish and the room stops laughing after that, that's a 4 year. You have to be doing comedy three years and really like go to like off nights in places like Bakersfield and Ontario.
I did a lot of Bakersfield. I did a lot of.
I told them Bakersfield has a great little comedy scene.
They really do.
I'll have to head up there for a couple days.
An hour and a half away.
Right over the grapevine.
Right over the fucking grapevine. It's not even an hour and a half.
Nope. You start learning all kinds of shit because you're over there, man. You know, I did Zany's the first time this weekend. It was the Nashville Comedy Festival. How great is that club? And that girl, Lucy, she loves you, man. Those guys reached out to me. This is old school. This is how I always think the business should work. They see I'm coming with Burr, and they go, hey, would you like to do some sets? Because we know you're only doing one set a night. You'll be sitting in your hotel room. Would you like to come do some sets? And fucking reached out to me. I was like, man, this is how I thought it was going to be years ago. Like, well, he came with Joey. He's great. We'll book you 4 months from now. I thought that's how it was going to be. And they reached out, and I went and did Zany's all weekend. They had a brunch show. It was fucking fantastic. Sold out Saturday at 2 o'clock. Just killer audiences. Oh, man. It was great, man. You done that room, right?
Yeah. It's funny. I was telling Dave, the owner of the Columbus Comedy Club.
Dave Stroop,
how much comedy has changed because cities have grown.
Right.
Let me tell you something, my friend. 15 years ago, you would have not come home with a pleasant Nashville story.
Oh, man, I bet, right?
You would have done okay.
Yeah.
It's guys like me at the time.
Yeah.
Always got to remember that's a Bible Belt.
That's right. That's right.
And what happens in the Bible Belt is they take the ride with you for 15 minutes when you're blue.
Yeah.
They take the ride with you for about 11 minutes.
Yeah.
And then as a comedian, a young comic, you always make the mistake of pushing the envelope a little more.
Gas down.
And that one reminds them that they're Christian.
Yeah.
And they can't laugh at that. And now the next 17 minutes is just people staring at you like you're a sinner. And then Stanhope went up.
Yeah.
And his first 12 minutes were tremendous.
Yeah.
And they sat there for 40 and stared at him. They weren't on to his antics at all.
Wow.
It was maybe 150 people who knew about Stanhope that were in the show that night.
Yeah.
This has to be 99.
Wow. And you're opening?
And I'm opening, and I remember that I did so bad.
Yeah.
That I never even considered calling that guy ever again. Like, I knew what the answer was going to be. There's no lying to yourself. Yeah. At that point, I was doing comedy 8-9 years. And the lying had stopped. Like, the lying stopped with me after, like, 2 years. I knew I sucked, and I knew how to work on it.
Right.
And you have to get on stage every night. Like, whatever thing I had, that things are going great, went away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And now you have to start working. And it was so weird that I walked into that room and never, ever, ever thought. I did so bad.
Yeah.
I never even went back there with Joe.
Wow. Like,
Joe would go there, and I'd go, I'm not going back there with
you. Yeah, yeah.
And the owner is such a nice guy,
which I love him.
The second thing I didn't like, because nobody could be that fucking nice.
Right.
Like, nobody's that nice.
Right.
You know? And at the time, 15 years ago, his other brother, who is now very nice, he's always there. They're great guys. But his brother owned the club in Davie, Florida.
Right.
Which is a suburb right out Fort Lauderdale, which was the Miami Dolphins practice.
Right.
And that club was brutal. Don't understand me.
Whoa.
This was way before the improv started.
Right.
And he had a club in West Palm Beach and one in Davie.
Yeah.
West Palm was, I bombed a bag of dicks there also. Not as bad as Nashville.
Yeah, right.
I headlined there one night because I worked with Marshall Warfield.
Yep.
And I got in trouble because I bought a gram of coke from the waitstaff and they hated me and they fucking blackballed me. So after bombing in Nashville and the situation in West Palm, I knew there was no, if they ever got together and they go, have you ever worked Joe Diaz? Yeah, he was at my club and took the worst bombing in the world.
Oh.
And then the other brother would say, he was at my club, didn't do that well, and bought a gram of blow from the waitstaff. And they got, yeah. I got in trouble for it.
Really?
Yeah, the manager came in. You buy a gram of blow from, why would you?
Someone snitched you off?
He sold coke too.
Right.
So he came in to bitch at me for going not buying to his waitress. Yeah, and I should have gone to him and bought it to him. Then he ratted me out.
Wow.
It was the creepiest thing in the fucking world. But that's the beginning of your comedy career.
Yeah, like, yeah, right, it. Yeah.
So to think of the stretch Nashville has made that I could headline there.
Yeah.
And people show up and laugh.
Right.
And, like, it is really, like, I would never, like, I'll tell you another night I took a tremendous bomb. Another club. I ate a bag of dicks at Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
On Charlotte's a Sunday tough. Night, on a Sunday night in 1998,
yeah.
On the way out of town, I took the late Continental flight. Continental was still around.
Oh, yeah, Continental Airlines.
They hubbed in Charlotte.
Uh-huh.
So every flight out of Charlotte for Continental was $10.
Whoa.
Like around the country, anywhere. Out yeah. of Charlotte was cheap, but to California, it was like $59. I took the late flight to do a set at that fucking Charlotte club. Like a guest set, like I called the club owner, I'm going to come in and rock you world.
Yeah.
And I took the beating of death in there.
Oh my
God. I didn't even shake his hand. I just went outside, got a cab,
yeah.
and went right to the airport. And that 5-hour, 6-hour flight home was brutal.
Ooh.
I had just bombed and went right from the club to the fucking plane.
From the stage to the plane, basically?
Stage to the plane with a bombing. With a beating, I had taken one of the roughest beatings that week in my life.
The Unabomber
you know,
tour.
Because here you are in the comedy store. You're a regular at the store.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be the elite of the elite.
Yeah.
And you're just dying. But then I put together that it was the Bible Belt.
Right.
And when I went to creative and did the one-nighters, that's where you go deeper into the Bible Belt. And that's where, like, we went to Knoxville and the chick ratted me out for sucking my dick. I just started yelling in the back and shit, you know?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then
Bible
like,
Belt.
Like, that whole week was a nightmare. Clark, yeah. something Tennessee. There's an army base there or something.
Knoxville?
I did okay. No, it was something Tennessee.
Right, right.
I did okay at the army base. Like, this is 20 years later.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you guys that I did okay there as a female, as a headliner.
Yeah.
There was one Friday night where I just took an emotional beating on stage. I lost him at the 5-minute mark.
Oh, man.
Then another time, Jimmy Schubert.
Yeah.
Got a movie. He got the movie Go, and he had a canceled. Where's Leonard Skinner from?
Gainesville.
What's right? the city on top of Gainesville?
Fucking.
Real crazy place.
I forget.
Okay, so.
Or Gainesville. That is
Tallahassee?
That
is that what you're thinking?
Tallahassee, Gainesville area. No.
Chattanooga.
No, that's Tennessee.
Yeah, yeah.
He had a cancel. On a fucking Monday, he got the call at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I was the only person that was available. So I took the gig. That's how I met Vinnie Lightbow. It was Vinnie Coppola, who lives around the corner from me right now. His father owns an electrical company.
Okay, so that's why I call him Lightbulbs. There we go.
Yeah.
I was like, where does Lightbulbs come from?
But I went down there as a headliner. Oh, Jacksonville.
Jacksonville. Oh, that's it, yeah.
Oh, was that a mistake?
Oh.
I had maybe 40.
Maybe 40 minutes?
Maybe.
Right, right. With lots of laughs.
Yes.
Yeah, and whenever people
never
take
forget,
it.
I called Doug Stanhope. I got Doug. I got an... Doug was popular down there at the time.
Uh-huh.
I'll never forget this. Doug was popular at the time. Like, Doug was starting to get popular on the road. And because Doug would fucking go down to these clubs and cause havoc in these cities. He would go to karaoke's and do more stand-up
yeah.
and get thrown out of a club. So the legend of Doug Stanhope, when he, you know, when Rogan goes into a city, he goes into the best steakhouse in the city.
Right.
He tips out four people, the yardstick a piece, the word gets out.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, ticket sales go up 20% because he gave out and gave $400 bills for tips for four different waiters. You know, Stanhope went to a bar and caused just havoc.
Yeah.
Like, if it was karaoke, he'd go up there and do, like, the fucking dirtiest jokes in the world. He'd get thrown out. You know, in the beginning, from 90, you know, from 95 to 2003, Doug Stanhope was a legend on the road, kicking ass with no TV show.
That's rad.
It was unheard of because his albums were phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, his early albums were really fucking phenomenal.
I love that guy, man.
Yeah, like, but this was when he was even a little bit more raw and younger and a little bit more energy. When he was just a smart ass of comedy. He was just the perfect smart ass of comedy. And I remember calling him up and going, I need your advice. They just offered me a headlining week. And I go, Doug, I maybe got 40 minutes. He goes, I've been around you a lot. He goes, I'm sure you come up with 20 fucking minutes off the top of your head. Take the fucking week. Take a chance. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Do 40 and run off the stage. I mean, he used to give the best advice.
Do 40 and leave.
Yeah, because he was so reckless. He didn't give a fuck. Yeah. That's what he went for, is make him talk. Fuck it. If you're going to go down there, make him talk. Go crazy. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I never forget. I went down there and took that. That's when comedy was Tuesday through Saturday. There.
Ooh.
And Friday night is all you could eat seafood night there.
Oh, fuck that.
So they come in from all over just for the free seafood. They come in there and start burping those old fucking shrimps, the hurricane shrimp and fucking.
Oh, burping hurricane shrimp.
Oh, you have no idea. Oh. You're up on stage smelling crab leg burps and fucking farts that smell like butter from all the butter there and the crab legs. They haven't had shrimp their whole life.
Oh, yeah.
And they go up to that peel and eat shrimp. That drives some people crazy. That shit drives people crazy. They think they're in fucking Venice, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
Dipping in that fucking cut cocktail sauce, eating them old shrimp a day before they go rotten.
Gross.
And they're in there fucking eating those softy. You ever get them? Like, they have a little coating on them.
That's gross,
and you
yeah.
still take a chance. You
it's
eat
like
them.
Rubbery.
Yeah, because you don't give a fuck. You like that free.
Yeah.
You have to swallow like a pill.
It's amazing what you'll eat when you don't have money because it's free.
Oh Jesus.
AMPM burgers, 99 cents. Oh, I'd eat two of those.
Bro, I tell you what, nobody liked the AMPM burger better than Joey Diaz.
I fucking worship it.
Mustard on them. Oh. I could eat two of those fucking things by the airport there.
Oh, yeah.
When I was broke, shit. I'd go in there right before I went to the airport and inhale two of those burgers with onions on them. They got those fucking powdered
onions
on the side.
There's a McDonald's right around the corner.
I wouldn't touch McDonald's.
You know what I did, Jay? That cross street from the Whiskey at Go-Go, they had the AMPM there for years, and now it's called Hawaiian Gas or whatever. But I would get the burger, and then when the guy wasn't looking, I'd hit the nacho cheese and just pump a fucking gallon of nacho cheese on each burger and then put jalapenos on it. I'd eat them every day, dude. $2.
Fucking disgusting.
Right?
Where are you at soon? Where are you traveling to next month?
Ooh, I'm about to headline San Francisco Punchline.
What date?
May 2nd through the 5th.
Beautiful.
Ooh.
And I'll be at the Tempe Improv May 3rd through the 5th. So we both got Cinco de Mayo gigs. Tempe, I'm coming big.
Boom.
Back home to where it all started. I used to be a fucking feature act there. I used to do the fucking Latino shows there. 3-4 minute, 20-minute spots. And I thought I was hot shit. Now I'm headlining Tempe. Jesus
rad,
Christ.
Right?
Fucking rad.
Dude, you're killing it
it's
out
rad.
There.
It's
I'm
rad.
I'm out there with it. You're killing
it. No, we're having great
Your
times.
Your draw's insane.
The people are great. The church family is on top of things.
It's a dream, man. It's a dream right there. Where you show up and the shows are already sold out.
Yeah, no. It's beautiful. So Tempe, I'll see you down there. And then I think the 19th or the 17th of May, I'm up in Providence. At the club up there, and then on that whole weekend, I'm at the Stress Factory in New Jersey with your boy Matt fucking Fultron. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it'll be a fun fact weekend there in May, the 18th through the 20th or something like that. You got to check the website or whatever the fuck it is, but forget about that right now. Let's just worry about Tempe, and let's have a fucking party down there. I want to talk to you guys about something real quick. For the last 5 years, I've been friends with this girl. Online, you know, she used to hit me up and never said nothing out of line. She had a boyfriend. I would talk to her and the boyfriend would hit me up, and I would go to Minneapolis and she would show up, and I got to meet her twice, you know. And the last time I got to meet her, I could tell that progress, she had a disease that she didn't tell me about, and the progress had taken a little bit. And she's a proud girl. She's a sweet girl. Her name is Brandy Lynn. And today I put a link up on Twitter and YouTube and to YouTube pages. If anybody needs help, it's this girl. I've known her for 5 years. This is not a scam retweet. This is not a scam. You guys know I don't go to you guys for church help for fucking scammers. This is a health situation here. I'm thinking of taking Dean and going up there and doing a Wednesday, two shows at the House of Comedy, and like give him half the fucking door or something like that.
I'm in on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a church family girl, and I already saw people pour their hearts out, you know, $5, $2, $10. It all adds up, guys. So we're the church family, you know, and I know who's faking the funk, and I know who's really part of the church family. And if they need help, we got to do whatever we can to help them out. Like I said, $2 helps, a dollar help. Lee and I donated this morning from the church, and do what you can. I love you guys. I'll be back Wednesday with my man Gregorius, the BJJ fucking savage, Nick Gregorius. We're going to do a tremendous podcast on BJJ. He's doing a seminar at Subconscious BJJ on Lancashire in North Hollywood Thursday night at 7 p.m. You do not want to miss it if you're in the Valley anywhere. He's fucking great, this guy. I love him with all my heart. You know, I'm not the best jiu-jitsu guy, but I still go and I try my best, and that's all we could do. I want to thank Dean Dower. I want to thank you again for putting me on the AC.
It was an honor to have you, tribute.
I want to thank you for being a hustler and for always bringing great conversation and love to the church, brother.
I love doing this podcast.
You're a great man. And go see him in San Francisco. You know we love you up there. And the church loves you. Go support Dean Dower up there at the fucking
Punchline.
Punchline.
Yeah.
That's the homie fucking club right there.
Oh, you and I did it together last year. Yeah, yeah. And your flight was delayed, and they still stayed and watched me headline.
That's right.
That
that's
was incredible, because
right,
it was right. The foggiest night ever.
Ever.
Oh, were, ever. That ever. Was insane.
So that's what this church is about. It's about helping each other out and fucking. No, we're good. Thank you, brother. So that's it, man. Have a great day. We'll be back Wednesday. I love you. Stay black. I want to thank Dean. I want to leave you with a tremendous fucking jam by Rod Stewart, one of my favorite. Kick this fucking mule, Lee. Don't forget, go to honor.com right now and press in church. Get 10% off. And if you're a fat fuck or you're just looking for a great fucking gi with a great fit and durable, if your money's counting right now and you need a gi, go to fujisports.com right now and enter
church
and get 10% off your gi or your rash guard or whatever the hell you're looking for. Have a great fucking day. Stay black. Uncle Joey loves you.
On the alley, passion. Turn out your sidelight. Oh, ain't right.